Hey everyone, it's Ariel Helwani, and I wanted to let you know that each and every week I'm part of a great program called the Ringer MMA Show. I host it alongside two absolutely brilliant minds, their names Chuck Mendenhall and Pete Carroll, and every Thursday a new episode drops where we preview the weekend in mixed martial arts and react to all the biggest news. Plus, after every UFC pay-per-view, we give you a post-fight show. So, this is what you have to do. Just follow the Ringer MMA Show on your Spotify app so you don't miss an episode. We'll talk to you then.
It's the Ringer NBA Show presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
This episode is brought to you by Arby's. People come up with all kinds of excuses not to try Arby's. Things like, nobody eats there, Bill. Isn't it just roast beef, Bill? Come on, Bill, only grandmas like it. Well, excuses end with Arby's Free Sandwich Month. Arby's Rewards members get one free sandwich with purchase every week in April, online only. Now trying Arby's doesn't sound so crazy, does it? Join Arby's Rewards and order ahead today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of Weekends. I'm your co-host, Big Waz, a.k.a. Wozni Lambre, and I'm joined by my partner. You've read him in The Athletic. He's now a big part of the Dunked On media empire over there with my guys, Nate Duncan and Danny LaRue. He's used to work for the Milwaukee Bucks, so you know he's a big Bucks homer. My guy, Seth Partnow, what's going on, brother?
I take offense at being called a homer, but other than that, how you doing, Wozni? It's been a while. Glad to be chatting with you.
It's been a minute, man. I know you're very busy with your real job, traversing the planet, mainly Western Europe, drinking the finest wines, the most delicious hams, and the finest cheeses. I know that's what's going on over there, so I'm happy you were able to take some time out to talk to us today, brother.
You make my life sound so much more so much more Austin Powers than it actually is.
Austin Powers. I like that. Well, I wanted to talk to you about a myriad of things today because, you know, obviously I value your perspective for a couple of reasons. One, you were in the media for years and then you started working on the team side. So you have both of those perspectives. And then, you know, you do have a more analytical bent. Is that a correct way to phrase that?
I think that's fair.
Okay. Yeah, so I wanted to talk to you about the scoring in the NBA. We haven't really touched on it on group chat or even here, but obviously anybody who's paying attention to the league this year recognizes how crazy the scoring is, obviously, on a team level and individual level. Like, we had 2 70-point games this year. I think there's like 60 guys, if I'm not mistaken, scoring 20 points or more. We're like, when I was growing up, right, and I was like 7 years old collecting basketball cards, if a guy averaged 20 points a game, it was huge. It was like, this guy's clearly an all-star. He's clearly one of the best players. And so anybody who's been paying attention long enough sees the league is just, the points are just pouring in. My guy Habistro, on his show, he talked about, you know, possessions are up and obviously people are taking and making a lot more threes. Is that it? Is that all there is to this?
No. I mean, first of all, possessions are up. That is certainly part of it. Second of all, we've certainly, the entire league has basically, I don't think there are any, no, we want to set up our plays to get, you know, catch and shoot 17 footers. That doesn't happen anymore.
No, nope.
So offenses have gotten harder to guard. I think the rule set in place now it's been trending pro offense for a while. I think you can trace a lot of the modern style back to kind of the relaxation and on hand checking rules, you know, 20 years ago. But I think possibly with the degree to which the carry rules have been interpreted, the way the gather step rules have been interpreted, the leeway that screeners can get in terms of how much they can roll and move.
Everybody's KG now.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also just like you give crafty offensive players a clear indication on what's a foul. There are going to be guys who play for that. So I think all those things all sort of play into it. Oh, and then like partially because of the rise of the three-pointer, the skill level of players has risen, I think, because kind of have to be able to do that to be on the floor. And but on top of that, I think there's some stylistic things. My podcast partner at Nerder, Modakia, likes to point out that defenses have become predictable. So it's almost like offenses know. I mean, we know what the rotations are. We know what triggers a rotation. And if we can create situations because we can set a wide screen, shall we say, you can get into situations where, okay, we dribble the ball over here, do this thing, defense rotates, swing the ball open three. It's like, press the button, get the prize. So that's part of it. And that makes it a little easier on offense. And then I think because offense has become so important, there used to be like the Keith Bogans player doesn't exist in today's game, where you have a choice between, a functional player, but he's going to be a defender versus he's going to be an offensive player.
They always go offense first now.
Like how many teams are choosing, that the Suns are a special case because of who they have on their roster. So they kind of are forced to have that be Torrey Craig. But I think most teams, if you said, okay, your fifth guy is going to be George Niang or going to be Torrey Craig, I think by and large teams are all taking George Niang. And that does two things. One, puts more offensive players on the floor. Two, it puts more bad defensive players on the floor. So I think it's a bunch of things rolling together. And I think this year it feels like almost we've hit a tipping point where it was rising. And now this year it's just an avalanche.
Yeah. When I'm watching this stuff, it's kind of crazy because a lot of my frame of reference is the LeBron Heat teams, right? Where they start off as this defensive juggernaut. And by the end, they're kind of like a blah defensive team and they just score on people. And these groundbreaking lineups was Bosh, Shane Battier, D. Wade, and Mario Chalmers next to LeBron, right? And, when they would close, of course, it was Ray Allen, who is all-time great. And even in that time, was like, holy shit, this guy's a supernova from three. But, like, Shane Battier and even Bosh, who later on became a more willing and ready three-point shooter, these guys were not shoot. They certainly weren't letting it fly like George Niang. Where it's just no hesitation. Anytime he has even a little bit of space in the corner or above the break, but he's just letting it fly. And I'm just like, that paradigm is just gone. Like the people who are taking these shots, I'm watching the Clippers the other day against the Warriors. And like, of course, Kawhi Leonard, when he gets into the teeth of the defense, you have to put two guys on him. Like he's Kawhi fucking Leonard. Like there's no other option. He's kicking it out to wide open Eric Gordon. Like this guy's not just a regular shooter. This guy is an insanely good shooter, right? I just think the difference of the open shots that are conceded, like these guys, not only are they shooting it with confidence, they're just way better than 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, it feels like.
I think it's that, but it's also, maybe those guys on the Heat weren't all willing to shoot, but you're talking about a lineup where there's, because Bosh can handle the ball, Bosh can play at the elbow, Bosh can initiate some stuff. I think you're seeing more lineups where there are four and even five guys who can do something with the ball.
Right.
It's almost moving away a little bit from the not to use a cliche term at this point, but the heliocentrism of one guy handles the ball and everyone else does anything. Like you look at a team like Utah this year, like they've had a lot of success because they don't have any superstar players.
Right.
But there's five, even Walker Kessler can run a DHO. Mm. So you have all of these guys who you help off of them and they can make a play. They can keep the thing going. It's almost like everybody has some of the 2013-14 Spurs in their bag.
Yep.
Because like you know, Boris Diaw's skill set is now like a baseline rather than no, not everyone's as good at it as Boris Diaw was, but it's like you have to be able to do those things now, as opposed to being, wow, they've got a guy who can do those things.
Yeah, and that's why it's great that you said the skill level, because, you know, I remember when the stretch four became this like buzzy word and everybody needed a stretch four because that was just going to turn your offense into just, you know, completely unbelievable. And then coaches were just like, I'm just going to put a little guy on him. He's going to get in his shirt. These dudes can't dribble. They're definitely not posting anybody. Like, it was nothing to get rid of a stretch four who literally was just a 6'10 guy who shot threes. It's like, if you can't dribble, if you can't read a defense, if you can't punish a smaller guy, your function is useless, right? Like, they made that obsolete so quickly. Whereas now, like you mentioned, like, these guys can do multiple things, not just swish a corner three-pointer, right?
Yeah, it's Marcus Morris, not Rashard Lewis.
Right.
You know, I think Rashard Lewis is probably a little bit better, was probably, at least in his Orlando days, early Orlando days, was a better player than Marcus Morris is now. But the stuff you're talking about, ability to guard multiple positions, he ends up with a point guard on him. Marcus Morris can put that guy in the basket.
Yes.
And I mean, 2 years ago, Marcus Morris could.
Right, you know, sure, sure.
Part of what we've seen with the Clippers this year is the fact that, you know, everyone's just a little bit older. But
yeah.
But you know what I'm saying about that sort of archetype player. And so, yeah, you're right. It's not just a tall guy who's a spot-up shooter. It's a beefy three instead of a tall three. Almost.
And I know somebody listening to this would be like, all right, so where we, like, what's the conclusion to draw from this? I know, like, I like to fancy myself as a more intellectual basketball consumer, but even me, I get the sticker shock, old man knee jerk of just like, come on, guys scoring 160 in regulation. This is nonsense. This is hogwash. You know, has it gone too far? Do we need to sort of address this in the rules? I don't mean like the foul seeking behavior. I want that shit completely eradicated. I want to see people get punished. Like Eric Gordon, not only did they not call the foul for him when he jumped into the guy, clearly, they said, no, you actually get a foul. Right. Instead of even a non-call, it's like, no, you're a foul. I want to see more of that for the foul seeking stuff. I really want to see people get penalized for trying to the trickery with the refs. But is this a bad thing ultimately?
So on that last point, I'm a big soccer fan. And I actually they sometimes give yellow cards for diving.
Yes.
I actually like it. I like it better when the ref looks at the guy and just waves at him to get up. That to me is even like worse than a yellow card. It's like, nah. Like, I want to see if Trae Young is going to flail his arms into a guy and fall down. I want the ref to run by and look at him and just kind of go, nah. And we just keep playing rather than them call the offensive foul. So, yeah, some of it is rules. Like, I think, yeah, we can, you know, do more to eliminate some of the foul seeking behavior. We can clean up the illegal screens a little. The lead, they kind of did some stuff with calling more of the carries, and people didn't seem to like that very much.
I mean, Jordan Poole can dribble for 3 weeks behind
him. If you can't dribble without putting your hand into the ball, maybe, you know. So I don't know. That's something that would have to be probably communicated at the start of the year. It's like, this doesn't go anymore. You know, the big,
yeah.
They all do it. But I think it's also, I mean, we haven't seen the next, like, switching was supposed to solve everything, right? And what that's actually done is I think that's instigated the teams instead of having the, okay, well, we're going to switch and our point guard's going to end up on your stretch four and he can't do anything. Now it's like, well, this is a guy who can handle the ball, who can do some things. So you switch and you're now at a disadvantage because maybe George Nagy isn't the best player, but you put him in an advantage situation. Against a guy who's smaller than him, you can back him down, make a pass, do all those things. So I don't want to say that's negated switching because, you know, Boston with their full complement of players can still be a very effective switching defense.
Switching team, yeah.
Yeah. You know, the Warriors when they were, you know, whole and healthy this year could still be a very effective switching defense. But I think the next revolution sort of base guard your guy defense. The team that we've been looking at a lot this year, who's kind of showing some avenues for it, has been OKC. They don't do a lot of like the soft switching early. They stay home. They help and recover. And then late in the shot clock, they switch aggressively. They switch and trap aggressively. They are, you know, on offense, we often talk about, you know, you want to get in a situation and just play basketball. Whereas the defense has become very rote. And OKC seems like, all right, figure it out defensively a little bit. And that, you know, that's a little harder to do. But if you know, if you can do it well, the offense doesn't know what you're doing. And so you don't get those easy, well, I'm just going to dribble the ball over here, call for a middle screen, and this guy's going to help out to the nail. I'm going to swing, corner three on the other side, which is so often what we get with as predictable as kind of NBA defenses have largely become, at least in the regular season.
Yeah, so I guess what you're telling me is that defenses just need to become more dynamic. And if I'm honest with myself, you know, this is just how the pendulum swings. At a certain point, offenses gain the upper hand overall. I remember when fucking ice defense was first introduced and it was tripping people the hell up, right?
Yep.
And if I'm honest with myself, I'd rather watch this than that. So,
yeah. No, I agree with you. I prefer, like, if we're going to go too far to one direction or the other, I would definitely prefer it to be too far to the offense.
Yep.
But I think I kind of agree with you that we've maybe gone too far. And can dial it back a little bit. I mean, we've already beaten and are in the process of smashing the record for most 30-point and 40-point games in the season. Like, absolutely obliterating those. Like, we're basically, like, first or second night after the All-Star break, broke those records. And, you know, 50-point games is out of reach because, you know, Wilt in one season holds the all-time record. And you know, the Chamberlain records, and many of them are still intact. But, like, other than that, like, this is the first time there's ever been 270-point games in a season.
Crazy. Like, just crazy. Get off the bench and bet the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Because right now, FanDuel is giving new customers 10 times your first bet in bonus bets. It doesn't matter if your first bet is an air ball. You'll still get up to $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. Tonight, my favorite bet is Golden State at the Atlanta Hawks. They are 4.5-point underdogs. These guys are trying to maintain their seeding in the West. They don't want to end up in a playing game. I think they're going to play pretty hard. That's at plus 160, so there's some free money right there. With FanDuel, you can bet on everything from the money line to point spreads to which player will score first, all on a top-rated sportsbook app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. So don't miss out. Just visit FanDuel.com/RingerNBA to get in on the action. That's FanDuel.com/RingerNBA. Then place your first bet to score up to $200 in bonus bets guaranteed. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NBA. 21 and over in select states. First online real money wager only. $10 deposit required. Refund issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York. Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, and Virginia. 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777. Or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700, or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. Visit www.mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming, or visit www.1800gambler.net in West Virginia.
This episode is supported by State Farm. Man, I remember when I first got into a car accident, it was pure frustration because I did not have State Farm. And now that I do have State Farm, it is an exclamation of pure joy. But the only words that you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com.
This episode is brought to you by Arby's. There are so many excuses not to try Arby's. Things like, who the heck is Arby? I don't feel like a sandwich right now. Or how many times do I have to tell you? I'm vegan! Well, excuses end with Arby's Free Sandwich Month. Arby's Rewards members get one free sandwich with purchase every week in April, online only. Now trying Arby's doesn't sound so crazy, does it? Join Arby's Rewards and order ahead today.
So, of course, I can't have you up here without talking about the Bucks. Your Bucks are riding high.
My Bucks.
They seem to be the most right now, it's inarguable. They're the most dominant team in the league right now. They are absolutely grounding people into powder on defense, just suffocating guys. You know, obviously, we know what Giannis does. A lot of people believe that Brooke Lopez should be in contention for Defensive Player of the Year. I tend to agree with them. Watching Jrue Holiday, I can't say it enough. Like, what this dude does to all NBA caliber guards on a regular basis, where he makes these guys look mortal in this offensive crazy-ass, you know, sort of environment is kind of nuts. They do seem to be the most dominant team in the league right now. Are you feeling like these guys should be the title favorites?
I picked them, having protested that they're not my Bucks. I did pick them to win the title before the season. I thought it was going to be Bucks over Nuggets in the finals. And you know, some of that was based on, you know, assuming that Chris Middleton was going to get back and healthy. And he's not been great, but he's rounding into, you know, good enough. They've gotten a lot more out of Joe Ingles than I thought they were going to. Brooke Lopez is having, as you said, a spectacular season.
He's incredible.
If I had a vote, I know he's probably the betting favorite now. If I had a vote, he'd be second. I would still go with Jaren Jackson. Yep. But certainly, as of right now, but I think over the last month of the season, it's certainly like, he's certainly like, Lopez could certainly like catch in my mind where Jaren has been. And so he's right there. And Giannis, and they have a bunch of like hard-nosed physical. He can put great pressure on the ball. You mentioned Jrue Holiday. Like, Javon Carter is, you know,
he's a ball hog.
That can't be fun to play against. It's like, they've got Javon Carter and Jrue Holiday on the floor, and we're supposed to bring the ball up against that.
Yeah.
Like, that can't be a
crazy
lot of fun.
Yeah. And the shit about Ingles is important too, because, you know, my skepticism with the Bucks will always be the same. I've watched enough half court playoff Bucks offense to be skeptical, right? Like, to be like, all right, as good as they can be, they're literally going to score 82 points in a freaking playoff game this year, right? Like, it's just what they do every single year. So I'm definitely skeptical, but I like what Joe Ingles does. Like, his savvy on the ball, of just understanding defensive, like where the defenders are placed. And like you said, predicting what defenders are going to do. Like, it doesn't matter that he's not as quick, or not that he was ever that quick anyway. Obviously, he's got a pull-up game when defenses try to sort of sag off of what they're doing and help on guys like Giannis and Brooke Lopez in the paint. I like what he's doing, but I don't know. Are they going to have enough offense in the playoffs is my question.
I mean, I'd say everything you just said. Being 6'9" helps there too.
Yeah,
that sort of opens up the entire court to you as a passer in a way that it wouldn't necessarily be for like a 6'2" point guard. I think if he can stay on the floor defensively in the playoffs, and that was always my concern on top of the health, is he started even before he hurt his knee last year, he was really starting to look a little creaky. If he can stay on the floor enough defensively, just being able to run like middle pick and roll with him and Giannis, or him and Brooke Lopez, or him and Bobby Portis, like, that gives them a little bit of a floor on some offensive possessions that they haven't always had in the last couple of postseasons. Like, they haven't really, you know, the fastball has always been, okay, Giannis drive really fast at the basket, then we'll see what happens.
Beat the hell out of people.
Yeah. And, you know, as team, you know,
and it works.
Yeah, and it works. But, you know, the Bucks do not have a an all-world collection of shooters. So what happens is defense gets compact, and he tries to do that and runs into a wall. And if the, you miss a couple shots, you start to tighten up. The defense starts to compact even more, and that kind of snowballs on itself. If they have another thing they can go to that isn't Giannis doing that, or isn't, like, you know, Chris Middleton mid-post ISO, that they can get some they can create some defensive movement with. Like, that is a club they did not have in the bag last year in a postseason. And, you know, but it's still the big if. I mean, whether or not he just has a giant target on his back defensively, and he doesn't give enough offensively to overcome that. I think that's the question, aside from health, for them entering the playoffs.
I picked the Nuggets to win the championship this year. I thought they would play the Celtics. And I just really just – I was just like, look, I think they're going to score against anybody. And against this, particularly the Bucks, I feel like their defense can figure something out. Right? And obviously it would be a seven-game series, and it's strength on strength. But it's just like, I think you can figure out how to guard these guys over the stretch. But, you know, I could easily see it going the other way, where their defense just straight up isn't good enough to contain what Giannis brings to the table, and they get beat. But I do, they are still my pick to come out of the West. And I would give them a healthy chance against, you know, even the best teams in the East. But I, you know, because we are getting you out of here, but I did want to get you on MVP, because it seems to be, outside of the Ja Morant shit, the stuff that gets people the most riled up. Who is your MVP for? Second, who is your MVP? But first, I need you to explain to me, why are white writers so racist? Why are you guys so racist? You media voters, and explain the racism to me, please, Seth. No, I'm just kidding.
You trying to get me fired?
For the record, I understand. It's not lost on me as a black man how somebody could be like, man, you know, like Michael Jordan and Kareem and all of these people never won three straight MVPs, but like Nikola Jokic.
I'm glad you went there, because a lot of that, oh, you can't win three, like LeBron didn't and MJ didn't. And the years where they didn't, you look back on and say, oh, we can I swear on this podcast? We fucked up.
Of course you can.
We fucked up by not giving them by giving it to Carmelo and Derrick Rose those years. We wish we hadn't have done that. But now we want to use that as precedent.
Right.
The three straight MVP thing is more that, you know, if you look at guys who've won two straight, their third year has generally not been as good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Giannis 2 years ago was, you know, they experimented in the regular season and it worked out and they won the championship. Aside from, like, you know, the year that MJ would have won three in a row and LeBron would have won three in a row, and we recognize those as mistakes. Jokic has been better this year.
Yes.
Like, he's so he's not having the okay, well, I just had two great seasons. It's like, okay.
He's having his best season ever.
Yeah. He was certainly an unusual MVP the last 2 years, given the level of team success.
Yeah.
But it's two COVID years, so no shit, it was unusual. Like, everything about the NBA was unusual the last 2 years. And so I don't, like, he had MVP-worthy years, but he also kind of, there was a little bit of by default because everyone else kind of who was on that level missed so much time. This year, he has been, the team, he's had his guys back. The team has been better. He has been fantastic. He is, like, it's funny, like, the area where like, you know, if you think that Giannis and Embiid are the other top three candidates, and I think those are the clear top three.
I think that's clearly the two.
Give or take Jason Tatum. I think Tatum's probably getting, like, he has the misfortune of having his best stretch of play at the beginning of the year, which for whatever reason matters less in MVP voting because we have short memories. Because, you know, how many crazy things has Kyrie done since Tatum was amazing? but you know, their supposed advantage on him is in scoring. And Jokic is by far the best combination of volume and efficiency in the NBA this year as a scorer. Mm. And that's before you get into the fact that he's not in the discussion of the best passing center of all time. No, there's no discussion. Passer. There. He is best passer of all time. And he's, yes. and he's
period.
You know,
full stop. We're talking about Magic, Stockton, LeBron, yeah. whoever you want to put up there, Bird, whoever. Yeah. He's there.
Like if he had prioritized it, he could be averaging a triple double this year. No, I'm not going to say, oh, he doesn't stack bad, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, I think you kind of saw it a little bit in the All-Star game.
This is not the Westbrook stat padding. This is not that. You just watch the games. He's making the right play every single time.
Well, and there's also games where he's like, oh, we don't need me to do that tonight. All right, I'll just kind of sit out here and do my stuff, and I'll take 9 shots tonight. We'll win by 25. Like he's done that. I don't, you know. Because Embiid and Giannis are trying to win MVP, I don't think you're going to see any games like that from those guys. And that's not to, you know, I think stats only take you so far. Like, stats get you in the conversation, but then trying to totally parse just from stats.
Well, I want to talk about the parsing, right? Specifically with Embiid. I think some people would say that Embiid he's a great offensive player. He's playing, like, there's no doubt about it. He's scoring at will, essentially. If not a great offense into himself. I think that's the difference, right? I think Jokic is an offense. Embiid is a great offensive player, but I don't, obviously, they're worlds apart on defense. I don't think that can be argued. And what would you say to some people that say Embiid is making up the difference defensively?
I think that this is not, as just from a night-to-night regular season impact, I don't think this has been Embiid's best defensive season. I think if you're saying we're getting into like fourth quarter of game 7 in a playoff series, who's going to bring it on defense? Yeah, unquestionably. I also think that at least in a regular season setting, I think Jokic is a better defender than he's, like, he can't protect the rim. We know that. But he's smart. He can be in good spots. Great hands, gets tons of steals. So he's not Nick Vucevic on defense. Right. Put it that way. He's not Carl Anthony Towns on defense. I think over the course of the regular season, I think yes, Embiid has been better, and Giannis certainly has been better. But I think that the gap is
much smaller than people would say.
I think
in terms of output or in terms of actual ability?
In terms of output. I think, again, you get it. You get us in a game. But the MVP is not game 7 of the playoffs.
Yeah.
MVP is 82.
Fair.
And if we want to do a playoffs MVP award, I'm here for that. But it gets weird when we say, well, because he can't win MVP this year because his starting point guard in the playoffs the last 2 years was Facundo Campazzo.
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah, the Pizziolo.
Like if you want to make the argument that you think Giannis or Embiid has a better season, I'm here for that. Like, those are perfectly credible arguments. Just the attempt to
the
disqualify. 6 seed,
he got smoked in the first round, the blah, 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 blah. Like, if talk to any Warriors fan, Jokic was by far the most scariest proposition that they faced in the playoffs individually. It's not even freaking close. He was dominant, okay? Like, he was dominant against the Warriors, who basically make everybody look human. That wasn't the case with Jokic in the playoffs last year. And I think the difference, what people refuse to bring up for me when, you know, the Giannis stuff, especially with the Giannis case, Giannis was worse in the playoffs during his MVP seasons. That made people feel like, yo, what are we doing? Is he really the best? Blah, blah, blah. He played worse than his capabilities in those postseasons, particularly in the rounds that he left in. And so it left people to be like, maybe this guy isn't who we think he is. Those people were wrong, but I understood that argument. That's not what happens with Jokic. He's even better in the playoffs. It's craziness.
The only thing, like, the biggest demerit you can give him as a playoff is, like, the losing of cool and, like, some pretty ugly ejections, frankly.
Yeah, sure.
Like, that's certainly fair. But yeah, no, I mean, I think from a when he's on the court standpoint, I think his playoff resume is pretty unassailable.
Yeah.
In terms of basically, and the funny thing is I think that that the playoffs actually made him like the, if you remember the first round of the bubble, there was that series, the Jazz and the Nuggets, and the Jazz looked like they decided, all right, we're not letting Jokic beat us with his passing. We're going to make him score 40 every night to beat us. And we don't think, it's not that we don't think he can do that. We don't think he wants to do that.
Right.
And it took him a couple games. And then he was like, oh, I can get buckets. And he basically hasn't, and he basically hasn't stopped since then. Like, yeah, the level of, well, I'm just going to score. Like, I like passing is cool, but buckets are cool too. Like, and he just hasn't looked back since then. Like, he's taken his offense, like his, not just his playmaking, but his scoring game inside, outside, on the move. Like, he catches the ball at the elbow and he turns and shoots that little floater in the middle. What do you do with that?
He is the deadliest crunch time weapon in the NBA. I don't care what anybody says. As much as I love Steph, I love KD, those dudes are getting you jump shots from 20 feet and beyond. They can make those shots. They're great at them. Jokic will get you a freaking 7-footer. A 7-foot shot with the game on the line consistently if you try to guard him with one person. And if you don't, it's a wide open jump shot. I'm done. I don't even need to do this anymore. it's just to me, if you don't watch this dude, and again, I'm invested in my own pick and sounding smart, so I'm invested in my own vanity. So I end up watching a lot of Nuggets games, and I just watch it. I'm just like, you can't do anything with this dude. Nothing. And so, you know, obviously he's the MVP to me. I think Denver's going to surprise people how well they play in the playoffs. Ultimately, I think they're going to go to the finals. I think they'll win, but obviously I wouldn't be surprised if they lost, right? I just think the world of the guy and what he's doing. But we do got to get up out of here.
Before we go, I'm as a fan, I am excited for Denver in the playoffs, both because of Jokic, but the number of different matchups where it's Aaron Gordon versus whoever. Mm.
What's up, bro?
He almost let me finish.
Seth's son is beautiful, bro. Wow.
All right. I guess that's my cue to get out of here. Bruce Partnow making his daily podcast appearance.
Tell the people where they can find your stuff. What's up, Bruce? Let your dad plug his work. We want him to shill up here. He's tired of dad not showing him attention, man. He needs your attention, Seth.
So you can find, I'm, you know, writing probably about once or twice a month right now at The Athletic Weekly on Nerdish, she wrote. Big stuff coming before the playoffs in The Athletic. Got my pre-postseason player tiers are going to come out, which I always
love that.
Always draws.
Gets the people going.
Everyone agrees with everything I say on that every time. So we're going to do that before the postseason, and we're going to do it in the summer, as like we always do. A couple times a week you can find over at Dunked On. And then Odakeel and I are regularly, you know, doing live streams of games on Playback. We're having a lot of fun with that. You know, Mo's got a very good eye for the game, and we just kind of rap and watch and end up watching a lot of Thunder, actually. You talked earlier about them defensively. Like, we've been watching a ton of them. They're great to watch.
Yeah, they're what, you know, Toronto thinks they're doing every year when they draft these rangy, young, athletic guys. But it's actually working over there. And that's probably because they have a freaking actual star.
Yeah. Can I make a plug, actually?
Yes, since please talk
to Wards. Jalen Williams for Rookie of the Year.
Okay. Okay. We might have to get you back on for some postseason awards at some point, because I know you're going to have some spice. But yeah, that's our show for today. I want to thank again the man with the wettest jump shot in NBA media, Seth Partnow. I want to thank my producer, Jade Whaley, because she is the greatest to ever do it. Appreciate you, Jay. She keeps the trains running on time. Make sure you check out everything else on the Ringer NBA feed. We're going to start hitting you with more stuff, more weekend stuff, more group chat, more everything as the playoffs start rolling in here. So be on the lookout for that. We'll see you guys next week. Peace.